project that we started a little over 2 years ago. It's funded by the Corey Education Center Outcome Research Institute. We were fortunate enough to be one of the first 50 grantees of the Corey. It's called a pilot project. And you can see it's on health advocacy by health professionals in acute care hospitals. I have some co-authors there. You can see them. They're unfortunately not here today. Oh, my name is Bruce Jansen. I teach at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. So it all began, this whole, my interest in this, all began when I was, let's see if I can get this to move forward. There we go. Oop, is that right? There we go. I wrote a book in 2011 for John Wiley & Sons called Improving Healthcare Through Advocacy. And why did I write it? Because I could find no framework in social work, nursing, medical literature for high value patient advocacy. Anyway, even though a lot of people talk about it, even though it's in the code of ethics of all of those professions that you should do this, there was no framework for how you do it. I just couldn't believe it, but there wasn't. So I sort of invented one. And then I came up with, and we'll talk a lot about this as we go along, the typology of seven problems. We'll come to that in a second, because it goes throughout this entire research project. There were other omissions in the literature. We could find no empirical data about patient advocacy or policy advocacy engagement by frontline health professionals in hospitals, acute care hospitals, anywhere in the literature. Again, can we talk about it? It's about ethics, but there's a surprisingly little empirical data about how often do people do it and with regard to what kinds of issues and problems. So that's how this got started.
And
the seven problems I just mentioned, we'll come back to these several times during this presentation. None of these will surprise you. Ethical rights. Patients have unresolved. Their ethical rights are not honored. Think of all of these as problems. They're not getting quality care. They're not getting culturally competent care. Not getting preventive care, not getting affordable care, not getting mental health care, and not getting community-based care once they leave the hospital or during the discharge process. The literature is filled with issues and problems that patients encounter in these seven areas. And I just came up with 118 manifestations of these taken together from an exhaustive examination of medical literature. So you can see that this is a patient-centered, patient-in-environment perspective. It's not focusing just on physiological problems. It's focusing on a whole range of problems that patients have. I think probably recorded like this brain because it's definitely patient-centered in that sense, a whole array of patient problems. So during the course of the research project, we've pared the 118 of my problems down to 44 because it just was an unmanageable number to have on a survey. Working with a stakeholder group, our project had a group of 9 stakeholders, all experts in advocacy, hospital administrators, nurses, social workers, all of whom had high-level positions in the healthcare system or were advocates themselves. They were our stakeholders. So they helped us pare down to 44 to 33. And here's just examples. We'll come back to examples as the presentation goes along. So with regard to ethical rights, accurate medical information, patients who don't get accurate medical information. Quality care, patients who don't get, who experience medical errors. Under category 3, patients who don't get the religious, spiritual, and cultural practices appropriately honored. Number 4, preventive care, patients who don't get preventive care for chronic disease if they have either early stage care or managed the progression appropriately. Under category 5, affordable care. Many patients can't finance their medications, as you know. Category 6, mental health care, many patients have mental distress stemming from their health conditions that's not addressed by the hospital. And finally, referrals. Category 7, community-based care, they have poorly managed referrals to the community once they leave the hospital. So those are 7 categories into which a lot of this study, you'll see, relates to them. Okay, we call frontline workers. This is really a survey of frontline workers in 8 acute care hospitals in Los Angeles County. We call nurses, social workers, and medical residents frontline health professionals. Kind of curious, when I wrote my book in 2011, the editor said nobody uses that term, frontline health professionals. So I took it out of my book. Well, in fact, people are using it a lot more now. It connotes health workers of a lot of proximity with patients. These three professions do frequency of contact with patients. Unlike attending and consulting physicians, they sort of roam the hospital and serve wherever they're stationed. They're not fixed to a certain caseload that attending and consulting physicians often have. They also can do case finding. They have a professional mandate to advocate for patients. All of the code of ethics for each of these professions are very clear on this. Thou shalt do patient advocacy. Thou shalt do policy advocacy. It's very clear, and you'll see all of the professionals we surveyed knew it was part of their code of ethics. And therefore, they have a potential to detect and address a variety of problems encountered by patients. So we thought, hey, if we're going to study patient advocacy, why not go to the professionals who are closest to a broad array of patients in these acute care hospitals in LA County?
See, I'm doing it without notes.
You're doing great. See, you need notes.
So we used the Qualtrics survey. The sample of 8 hospitals that we just said, they were of 8, actually 7 different kinds. There were church-affiliated hospitals, there were not-for-profit community hospitals, there was a big HMO hospital, there was a veterans hospital, children's hospital, public, general population hospital. Who did I forget? Anyway, you're getting a sense there are a broad array of hospitals. We didn't want one type to dominate the sample and therefore skew the results in some particular way. We recruited the 295 members of the sample group, 94 social workers, 97 nurses, 104 medical residents, by random selection from patient rosters of these hospitals. It's quite a challenge to get IRB approval from 8 hospitals, but we did it. Okay, so that's who we got the information from, and much of it on a Qualtrics survey. The gender of the sample, you can see here, mostly women. Caucasian professionals were a minority, 46%. The rest were split between Asian, Hispanic, Latino, African American, Middle Eastern, Arab, and others. Median age was 33. Median age was 37 and a half years of age. By the way, they all had to have worked in the hospital for at least 6 months prior to the survey. And many of them have worked for many, many years, more than that, in hospital settings. But say it's a very experienced group of health professionals. Okay, so this was strange. As I said earlier, there was nobody had tried to measure patient advocacy engagements by these kinds of professionals in healthcare settings. To our knowledge, we could find no data. So our intervention is very much linked to being able to measure what they do. And it's important to look at this because this is what was on our online survey to these health professionals. We want you, we said, to report during the past 2 months how many times have you engaged in patient advocacy with respect to patients with 33 named problems. And we'll see some of those problems in a second. We've seen a few already. Okay, so it's an intervention to help patients obtain services, rights, and benefits that they would likely not otherwise receive, and that would advance their well-being. Why do I emphasize that? Because there's kind of a high bar placed here on patient advocacy. You have to see a problem that a patient has that's unresolved. You have to say it's going to harm their well-being if it's not resolved. You have to say it's not likely that anyone else will step forward to help this patient if I do not. Then you have to say, if I have it, do it by a referral, the patient advocate has to follow up to make sure the patient receives assistance from the referral. Not including patient advocacy, sort of superficial referrals, don't just go get help in the community for your mental problem. Goodbye. Good luck. So it's a pretty high bar for them to say, I saw a problem, I engaged it, I did patient advocacy with that problem during the last 2 months. A policy advocacy, we also talked about, we measure death. And we define that as an intervention to change dysfunctional policies in institutions, community, and government that may create the need for patient advocacy in the first place. And it can include all those things: statutes, regulations, budget, mission, organization, culture, etc. So we're looking at both of these kinds of advocacy: patient advocacy, policy advocacy. Later on, I'll talk about, or ask you to think with me, can it advance 5 goals that most hospital administrators have? Customer relations, patient satisfaction, patient-centered care, staff morale, and participatory management. So we'll come back to that. Okay, so there are essentially 4 things we're looking at. 2 kinds of engagement: patient advocacy engagement, by the way, is during the prior 6 months, patient advocacy during the prior 2 months, then professional level things like skills and ethical commitment. Are they equipped to do this, patient advocacy, or do they think they are? And organizational support for them doing patient advocacy and policy advocacy. So those are the topics we're covering in this project. So we ended up with a lot of data. And conclusion number 1 was patient advocacy, not true policy advocacy, is not an ephemeral or marginal activity. We were astonished by the number of patient advocacy engagements these folks said they did during the prior 2 months with regard to 33 different problems. And candidly, at one point we said you could write in an additional problem. It's not even on our survey. They wrote in 295 people, wrote in 367 additional responses. So this is a central part of the activity of many of these frontline professionals. There's a lot of literature that suggests that's not the case. Well, our
research is counter to that. They're really doing a lot of it, and with regard to a lot of problems.
So let me give you 2 examples. Recall this was category number 7, community-based care. So we said on the frequency scale from never to always, tell us, during the last 2 months, how often did you do patient advocacy with regard to these 5 problems related to community-based care? So 83% said they did with regard to discharge planning. You can see the numbers are quite high here, suggesting considerable involvement in helping patients with unresolved problems related to these 5 issues. So these 5 are 5 of the 33 main problems in the online survey.
Okay, so then we did the same.
Here, to give you 1 more example, mental health care. These are, again, hospitalized patients. This is, again, during the prior 2 months. For these 5 main problems, this is our 6th category, you can see quite a few said, I did patient advocacy during the last 2 months, sometimes, frequently, or always, for patients who I saw with these problems. If you just take 1 treatment of mental health condition while hospitalized, 64% said they came to the assistance of patients who they thought were not being treated for a mental health condition while they were hospitalized. These are pretty amazing numbers, actually, given that,
as I said, much of the literature suggests there are many barriers to this, and a lot of frontline health professionals don't do that much of this.
Now, we also want to know, to what extent do these health professionals feel they have the ethical commitment to doing patient advocacy and the skills? And you can see here rather extraordinary numbers. 98 or 99% said somewhat, quite a bit, or a great deal, they have an ethical duty to engage in this. They're mandated by the code of ethics of their profession to do it. This, by the way, includes the medical residents who had similar high scores. They all said we should sometimes challenge providers' decisions in the hospital, and we should inform providers of patient rights. So, again,
fairly high involvement in this and commitment to doing this. We gave them a long list of skills drawn from the literature. What kind of skills needed to do patient advocacy, and here are just four of them. One skill is calling specific problems to the attention of a doctor. You could say 97% of us have made it, some have quite a bit or a great deal. And so forth down the list. Developing strategies to help patients resolve problems. So 94%. Use assertiveness to help patients. 94%. Use influence to persuade others. 94%. We had a number of other skills on the list, and there were similar high scores reported by these health professionals when they gave these responses. Bear in mind, the responses were totally confidential. They were done on an online survey at computers, either in their hostel or at their homes. They were transmitted to us electronically. We didn't link their names to the data, said they knew this. So they're not over-reporting for image purposes. And of course, nobody in the hospital other than they themselves saw this information, like their administrators.
Uh-huh. Okay. Organizational support, again, positive. I won't go over all of these. Just take a look at the first one. Supervisor encourages you to engage in patient advocacy. 86% said a great deal. Now here's a pessimistic view. So far I've given you one side of it. A lot of them did say, even as a number of them said, report on the higher end of the frequency scale, a number of them said seldom or never. So we'll just give a couple examples. So for example, if a patient writes the first category, 43% said, during the last 2 months, I've never helped a patient who I believe did not give true informed consent for some kind of procedure he or she had, and so forth. So a fair number of them say, seldom or never, even as many of them say, give a higher score for many of these. The same with preventive care. Seldom or never do they see a patient who has not had a wellness exam and come to that patient's assistance. 53% never see a patient who has not had immunizations and come to help that patient with that problem. So there are quite a few who say seldom or never. And there are some indicators of lack of organizational support. For example, when asked, do administrators, are they aware of unresolved patient problems? 30%, a third of them said very little or not at all. Suggesting, and I'll come back to this later, that administrators, they often view as sort of up there. It's a little bit like the captain on the ship. Some administrators, not all of them, are running the hospital up on the top of the deck. Under the deck, frontline health professionals are scurrying around doing all this work. And sometimes the top administrators don't know about it, know virtually nothing of it. It's just kind of an issue, and that's not true of all administrators, but this service is a bit suggestive of that. Here's one down here. Are you excluded from discussions about patient problems? 40% say somewhat, quite a bit, or a great deal. And about 30% say, do you experience hostile behaviors from other professionals? Somewhat, quite a bit, or a great deal. We won't go over policy advocacy because we don't have time right now, but I'll just tell you they do very little of it. Seldom or never, you can see, we asked them, to what extent do policy advocacy in regard to these seven categories of problems as a group? And huge numbers of them say seldom or never. During the last 6 months, this goes to, and just three minor specific examples, to what extent do you discuss a hospital policy with an administrator? 67% said during the past 6 months, seldom or never. Same with a protocol to improve patient services. Same with developing a multi-professional training program. So for whatever reason, so here's what we say. But here's the paradox. They're ethically committed to doing policy advocacy. They say they have policy advocacy skills. We give them a whole set of skills there too. And most of them say they have them. And they think they're supported to do this, but they just don't do it. So here are the questions to be asked. Why is it that a significant group report far lower rates of patient advocacy than others? Why is it that many health professionals report far lower rates of policy advocacy during the prior 6 months than they do patient advocacy during the prior 2 months? And to what extent, now that we've sort of concluded with just one thing, we've uncovered a rich body of data about advocacy engagers, particularly at the patient level, in the positive and in the negative of the policy advocacy level. hospital administrators, we think, should collect that data, work with health professionals on the front lines to figure out what it means, and then use the data for creative planning and involve the frontline health professionals in planning better to meet and address patients' unresolved problems. And that should be, we're arguing, or thinking, a basic part of the administration of hospitals. We don't believe it is now. We know it's not, because we don't think anybody's ever collected this data before.